You were the middle guy. I have no doubt in the mind. You were the sweet spot in the middle. See, there was a dud on one side, and there was somebody really, really rich and hot on the other side, and she picked you.
It's time for the Profitability Show. Inspiring conversations with successful business leaders, artists, and entrepreneurs that will get your blood pumping and your creative juices flowing. We'll focus on the latest and the greatest tools, techniques, strategies, and advice you can apply right now to achieve more success and improve your bottom line, no matter what business you're in. The Profitability Show, the business podcast that brings you less jargon and more margin. With your host, digital product strategist and innovator, Nick Knight.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Profitability Show. My name is Nick Knight, and today we're going to be discussing the customer experience and why it's so important with my good friend, Lori Guest from Solutions Are Brewing. Lori is a professional speaker and customer service expert who not only advises companies about how to improve the customer experience, she and her team also secretly pose as a customer or client and reveal exactly what's working and what needs improvement. So, get ready for some seriously actionable profitabilities with Lori Guest. I am so excited to be here with my good friend Lori Guest. Now, Lori is in my mastermind program, which I have a very small group of high-powered people. And you've met one of them earlier in the show, David Newman. Lori is another one, and we rely on each other to help each other's businesses grow. So that's how much I think of her. In addition to that, she's my newly found accountability partner. So that's another thing we're doing together. She is, you know, the advice you're going to get from Lori is going to be top notch. You want to really pay attention to her. She knows about a lot of things, but we're going to kind of zero in on her specifics of her business. She is a professional speaker. She's a secret shopper. What does that mean? And she's a customer service expert, among other things. So, Lori, it's great to have you on the show.
Hey, it's great to be here, Nick. I think us being accountability partners is kind of scary. It's like we know a little bit too much and just enough to be dangerous, don't you think?
That's right. That's right. There's just no secrets now. We just share everything. So, and she sees, you know, how long it takes me to get a podcast produced. So she holds me to the flame. It's awesome.
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about your business. So, you know, I give a little bit of information in the intro, but talk to us a little bit like what is your job like? What exactly do you do?
Well, I'm a professional speaker and trainer, and so I spend most of my time actually doing humorous keynotes. So about 62% of my income is getting up in front of large crowds for 45 minutes to an hour, and I like to think of it as edutainment. Make them laugh, but hopefully their pens have to move just a little bit. That makes me feel justified in being there. But mostly it's setting the tone of a meeting, and I love that work. My philosophy is get in, get out, get paid. And so I'm the opposite of many other people you might interview where their goal is to get into a company go deep, deep, deep and know everything about the company and have a long-term relationship. And that's not my model. Mine is definitely, I want to be invited back, but I don't need to get into a company and go super deep. So that's one division of my company. And then the other one, which has just been ramping up over the last couple of years, is a different division called the Guest Encounter. And that is where we do secret shopping and then provide a confidential report on what happened and then give them tools to fix the things that didn't go right. And what a hoot of a job this is, because you cannot believe the stuff you find when you secret shop. So, I'm really enjoying that. It's a small percent of our income right now, but I think it's the future for us.
That's great. Now, you told me a little bit about that before when we talked in masterminds and stuff like that. So, so kind of to define secret shopping. So, it's not so much like you're going into a Kmart or something like that to, you know, see where the products are placed on the shelves. You're going in to find out how the people who work at the company, and it could be any kind of company, not necessarily retail, but how do they interact with the customer and things like, can you tell us a little bit about like, what exactly are you looking for as a secret shopper?
Exactly, because secret shopping is nothing new. I think there's somewhere between 400 and 600 companies in our country that do this. But a lot of them, I like to use the 7-Eleven Slurpee as an example. A lot of them, they might pay you, Nick, $8 to go into your local 7-Eleven, get a Slurpee, and then fill out a report card that says, you know, here's what it tasted like, here's how the people treated you. It's just a really wide variety of things that they're looking at. That's not what we do. Ours is all about the encounter with the people. And so playing off my last name of Guest, it works perfect because we might be talking about a customer, a client, a patient or a patron. So it, the word guest just encompasses all of those people, anybody that you're going to encounter as your customer. And I'm seeing it through.
I got to say something.
What's that?
It just occurred to me that your guest encounters, you know, yes. And it worked so perfectly. And then if I did mine with night encounters, it'd be a completely different business.
I don't. We can talk about that at our next meeting. It might change income significantly if we have a division of night encounters.
That's sorry to interrupt. Continue.
Well, and I looked a long time to find a man named Guest just so I could, you know, make this all come true. You know, it's none of the other names worked, so it fits perfect for me. But what I try and tell clients right away is that I am not coming at this with some deep academic study or all kinds of heavy duty surveys. I'm really coming at this with myself and a team of shoppers who encounter you just like a real guest would encounter you. So we're telling you how we feel. And this is really interesting because you and I might shop the same place and you come back with a report card that's different than mine. Mm-hmm. So an example that comes to mind is I have a young assistant. She's in her early 20s. And I sent her to a bank, and the person who greeted her was in shorts and flip-flops on a beautiful Friday afternoon in Northern Illinois. She comes back and reports that it's a delightful experience. They're really down home, really friendly. And then I send a 55-year-old colleague of mine, and she comes back saying, I'm dinging them on, you know, their dress code, and I'm dinging them on how casual they are. So it becomes this really interesting report because you have to start thinking about your demographics. And so when I met with the bank CEO, I'm like, which culture are you wanting to get across? Are you wanting to say hip and trendy and young? Or are you wanting to say businessy and, you know, those types of things? So it becomes really interesting. There's not just this formal way of doing it, a lot of gut instinct. And I'm really enjoying what we're finding. We've been doing it for about 10 years. But not in a real formal manner like we've started in the last couple. So,
well, that's cool. So you actually have a team of people that you send out. So they're not. So what's interesting for me, I equate this to friends of mine who are kind of gambling experts who then, you know, they go into the casinos and as soon as they walk in the door, the lights go off and they go, hey, and they take them back out and throw them in the alley. So, yeah. But you don't want to have that experience as a secret shopper. So I presume that part of the repeat business that you can do is that, oh, there's Lori Guest again. You know, everybody knows you because you did a big keynote for everybody, right? And told them. So is that part of the strategy behind having the other people?
Yeah, it is. And also just the labor that it takes or the distance that we're traveling. So, for example, this year we did 108 banks in the southern part of the country, all in different states. They were spread out over 6 or 7 states. So obviously, I physically cannot secret shop 108 banks in a timely way, nor would I have the energy to do it. I love it when I'm the shopper because that's how I got started. But as the company has grown, I've had to release that a little bit and I find people. And so I'm lucky with the National Speakers Association. I have a huge reach into people all over the country. So it's one phone call to a pal going, hey, you got a couple buddies that want to make a few bucks? And I've never gotten a no. However, every time I have a spa client, I tell the secret shoppers, you get to go have a free massage or a free haircut. But when the gynecology client comes calling, it's payback time, right?
That's right. So
it depends on what industry we're secret shopping. We even did an infertility clinic. So I had to find somebody who was infertile to come with me to pretend to be my daughter. And sure enough, I found somebody. So it's really fun. I enjoy doing it.
That is so interesting. Now, what's really interesting about this is that you're being hired by these companies to perform this service. It's not like you're sneaking up on them. Like it's not Alan Funt with Candid Camera. I just dated myself. So it's not like a Candid Camera kind of or punked thing.
Right.
They're hiring you. So it's interesting for me to think of the kind of companies that are actually paying attention to this, that are saying, you know what, we need to make sure we have a fertility clinic, but we want to make sure that the people who work here are being really sensitive to people and treating them the right way. And, you know, you wouldn't think that they pay that much attention, but that's a really important part of your business. This is something we all need to pay attention to.
Oh, it's so interesting. And I can't think of an industry yet that we've had to turn down. Now, sometimes I have a big learning curve. I really got to get in there and figure out how do I talk their language. One of my favorite examples is a place that fixes hydraulic motors wanted me to secret shop their 24 sales reps. These are the people that go out and help repair these motors or get the business to get them in. And I'm like, boy, you're going to have to give me the language. So I sat down with the boss and he goes, now the thing is, when you pretend to call, your communication skills have to be different. You got to be blue collar. You got to be short and to the point. Well, it was like being an actress. You know, I'd pick up the phone. I'd go, yeah, this is Jackie over at the blah, blah company. And I'm wondering if that A52 has been fixed yet. We've been waiting for it for a long time. It became, all of a sudden, I'm like, wow, I'm not a very good actress, but I'm fooling these guys, right? And so it's really been interesting. In fact, in the last job, I did hire an actress and a comedian to be my shoppers. It was all on phone. And because she was an actress, she knew how to totally slide into the role. And I'm thinking, oh, I bet there's a lot of starving actresses out there I could find to do this. So
Fiverr.
It's a journey. All right.
That is really, really interesting. Wow, that is so cool. So okay, so now you've got this guest encounters business set up. Now, one of the things that comes to my mind is how does somebody find you? Like, what's the marketing behind that? Like, you know, I have a company and we, you know, we do customer support and stuff like that. If I wanted to find you and I didn't know you, what channels would I go through?
Right. Well, on the speaking side, usually it's people have heard me and then they've got the contact information. So on the speaking side, it's called Solutions Are Brewing. And if people will type in, you know, my name, or maybe they're looking for healthcare, a funny speaker, you know, I've tried to optimize my online presence the best I can. But the fact is, I'm not a famous name. I don't intend to be a famous name. So my marketing is definitely grassroots. And I do a lot of specific things before, during, and after a booking that encourages people to either refer me or bring me into their company to do a little more. On the secret shopping side right now, that is actually pretty cloak and dagger. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you go to the website, if you find the website, you won't find my name anywhere on it. Because I don't want my name attached to it. It's definitely behind the wall, so to speak. Mm-hmm. We may change that in time. So you ask an excellent question. How do I find the clients? It's usually converting them while I have them on the phone. So a bank calls and says, look, we want to talk about our customer service. And I listen to what they have to say. And then eventually I say, would you like to take a peek into how your customer service is working? Mm-hmm. Maybe when management isn't around, which is always interesting. When management's not there, the cats behave differently. Right. And usually they say, we are really interested in that. So it becomes a conversation, which is how I believe sales should go anyway. The marketplace is too big for me to do any kind of advertising or any of even a PR campaign. I don't think would get me the same exposure as just working at grassroots, kind of one client at a time, because I don't need to be a huge company. So works for me.
Wow, that's great. So I understand, and so that the listeners understand. So you have this fairly, I mean, I would say a very successful speaking career. I know you. We met through our association through the National Speakers Association. I know that you are rock star status there. Everybody loves Laura Guest. That's how I got to know
that,
you.
But okay.
Well, it's true.
Thank you.
And so I know, you know, you, I've never seen you other than on video. I've never been in the audience when you're speaking yet. And I would love to see that because I know how much fun it is just from what you've done on video. But so I understand. So you've got your speaking business, which you also speak on the customer service and customer relationship topic, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So you're leveraging the fact that you're in demand as a speaker, and you're leveraging that against the guest encounters, and that's how you're. So it's
correct.
It's kind of referrals and bringing them in through the back door. That's really cool.
Yes.
So I think the guest encounter. Well, you know, of course, this show is going to be so stellar that now you're going to be a famous name that you didn't want to be, and everybody's going to know you. So the jig is up.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I love it. That's really cool. So, all right. So you are now a certified speaking professional, which is a high designation in the speaking community. You've got this career that you just explained to us. Tell us how you got here. What was your career path? Like for somebody, let's say somebody's just kind of maybe in college right now, they're listening to the show and they're going, well, how did she turn, you know, herself into that career? What was the process that happened there?
That is the number one question that I'm asked, even by attendees at conventions and associations. People come up afterwards and go, I think I want to do what you do. How did this happen? And so I'm asked this a lot, as a matter of fact. So my background was in healthcare. I was in ophthalmology, worked for an eye surgeon for about 20 years. And my job was to work the referral network. So we had about 250 physicians that referred to us, and I was considered the liaison. So my job was to go out and make their practices successful, and that way they would send people to us. Well, the best way to make people successful is to help them find good people and train the people to be really stellar at what they do, customer service being a big part of it. So yes, I trained on the tactical side of doing their job, but I also trained them how to roll out the red carpet and do the very best customer service you could do. So we got a reputation for that. So one day a bank called and they asked if I would come in and talk about customer service. And I said, I don't know a thing about banking. I'm one of those people, if I have check blanks in my register, then I'm, you know, have money in the bank. And they said, we don't want you to talk about banking. We want to talk to you. Have you talked to us about the people skills? And I'm like, well, I could do that. And I loved it so much. Not talking about eyeballs anymore, but talking about other industries. Mm-hmm. And so later that year, I went to an eye convention and there was a lady speaking before me. Now, I was supposed to be the focus on speaker. I was supposed to be the keynoter, the one who's coming to town kind of thing. And instead, there's a speaker ahead of me. She's the only non-industry speaker and she rocked it. She had them crying, laughing. They were lining up to buy her books. And I'm like, who is this lady? This is supposed to be my spotlight. Who is this lady? So I go up to her afterwards and I go, what is your story? You're not even in eye care. And she introduces herself to me, and her name is Glenna Salisbury, and she is one of the beloved members of the National Speakers Association. I had never heard of NSA before, and she introduced herself, and I said, I think I want to do what you do. And she said, well, I'm the incoming president of NSA. Come on along, I'll show you how. And so about 4 weeks later, I was at the national meeting, which is our huge event. You've been to it. You know, yep, how overwhelming it is to be with 1,700 talkers all at the same time. And that was my baptism into NSA. And when I left there, it was in California, and I went and I sat at Big Sur for about 8 hours. Nice. On a blanket. And I wrote out my 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year, and 20 year plan.
Wow.
And I have followed it almost to a T.
Impressive.
Since I left the beach, and that was 20 years ago. So the plan ends this year. I don't have anything written beyond it. So it's time to write another 20 years, I guess.
And wow, that's
so that's how it
crazy.
Happened. So I gradually started speaking more and letting my real job go, so to speak. And my employers were so supportive, and they allowed me to let go of one branch and grab onto another without their skipping a beat. And so I'm often asked, when do you know it's time to quit your real job? And my answer is, I had 6 months of salary saved in the bank, and I had 6 months of work on the books in my new job. To me, that equaled a year. That gave me a year's space to either prove to myself I could do this and make a really good living, or I couldn't and I needed to go back to a real job. And that's pretty much how it happened. I've never looked back.
So. Wow, that is really cool. Now, I love the fact that you made this, you sat down and made a plan. I'm lucky that I have one of those. Mine only goes for an hour. So like at the end of this interview, I have no idea what I do next. I just go.
I know that about you now. We need to change that.
But no, that is really, really amazing that you can actually understand also your career enough to know that what's going to happen in 3 years, what's going to happen in 5 years, what's going to happen in 20 years. You know, I can't even say, you know, of course, I'm in an industry that changes hourly,
sure,
you know, but still, I don't know that I could say that because there's so many variables, and I would love to learn more about how to do that. That's really interesting.
And the plan has to be fluid. I mean, I had the benchmarks of here's what I want to achieve in this time period. But then as new things came, I mean, keep this in mind. When I started in speaking, websites were one of those things that just a couple people did. We didn't really know. And podcast, I'm like, what's a podcast, right? So there was so many new things that got added, but the structure was there. The formation of the building was there. And then you add the things and you find out, wow, I was wrong about that. Take that out, slide this in. So although there's a plan, you got to be fluid or you're going to get stuck.
Wow, that's really cool. All right, now tell us. So I want to change the direction here.
Sure.
Just a little bit. I want to throw you a curveball a little bit. I want you.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to preface this by saying that I got a bio on you. And there was a little tiny thing in there. Now, I'm not saying that's what you got to talk about. I'm just saying it got, and I said, you know what?
Uh-oh.
I'm going to ask Lori. I'm going to say, tell us something about you that others might not know. What when you wave your freak flag, what does it say on it?
I'm a huge game player. That's my thing.
That's what I thought from your bio, because I'm a big game player too. So, that's why I want to, continue on. Tell us about that.
Love games. In fact, one of my life dreams is to be a game inventor. I've invented a couple games, but have never had the ability to know what to do with it after I invent it. And so my dream is to see my game on the Toys R Us shelf is my goal. And I found little ways to do that along the way. So big game inventor. Probably the line you read in my bio is I'm a Monopoly tournament champion.
Yes.
That's one of the things that is an exciting piece of my background. And so, I can beat you at Monopoly almost every time we will play it.
Wow.
Challenge thrown.
All right. You threw it down. I'm taking it. So, all right. So now, we have, you know, 10 or 20,000 people listening right now. So, but we're just going to have a little private conversation here for a second. Sure. In front of everybody. I also have a game that I designed. I'm also a huge game freak.
I didn't know we had that in common.
Isn't this great? So I'm super excited. So we'll take it offline, but still we have to add that to our accountability thing. We got to work on our games because that, you know, and board games is a huge renaissance right now. So those of you who are listening to this podcast, you're talking about business. The business of board games is huge, folks. I'm telling you, take a look. If you go to YouTube, you can watch, there's a show that I watch there called Tabletop, where some actors, a lot of guys that you know, John Heder, who is Napoleon Dynamite, and a whole bunch of different people get together, and they play board games, and they have it professionally filmed, and they make jokes along the way, and it's like hanging out with these guys playing. But you learn how to play the games at the same time. You figure out which ones look fun. Fantastic. So board games are big. They're coming back. And me and Lori, you heard it here first. Me and Lori are going to go. We're going to crush it in board games.
Oh, I want to be on the cutting edge of something. That might as well be it.
That is so cool. Excellent. All right. So now I want to ask you, because you are a customer service expert, after all of these years of seeing what's going on in industries, particularly in how they, you know, guest relations and things like that. But what would you say is the number one problem plaguing businesses that you see? Like, what is that thing that, like, kind of everybody's kind of got it? They need to tweak it a little bit. What would that be?
Well, I'd have to say they establish their culture and their mission statement with words, but without behavior. So you can't find a company that doesn't have a mission statement framed and up on the wall, especially in healthcare. You see that all the time. And I remember it where I used to work, we spent 2 days as a management team crafting our mission statement. And a lot of time goes into this. Or people say they have a culture, they have great customer service. The words are going. But when I am the fake guest who comes in to experience it, I don't find that feeling very often. Every once in a while, I'll have somebody that just wows me and I'll go, that was good service. That was fantastic. You nailed this. But I would say that it is a very small percentage of the time that somebody gets all gold stars. They always miss something, and it's usually the little things, very little things.
So is it, so in your opinion, it's not only super important for us to craft that mission statement, because many small businesses and solopreneurs and stuff, they go, well, it's just me. I don't need a mission. I don't need what's my culture? I don't know. But, you know, and I would say that, you know, we're guilty of this at Revisit. We haven't, you know, we didn't like frame it on the wall. We kind of know because, you know, our CTO's a surfer, you know, he goes every morning, he goes surfing. And that's part of the, you know, we're very casual. We want to be approachable. We want to be likable. We have this. So our culture is, look, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not the stiff suit guy, you know, it's just not our style. If I'm going to speak on stage, you know, I'm the guy in jeans and a sport coat. I mean, I want it to be casual. That's, you know, we work in a world of entrepreneurs, digital entrepreneurs, people who work from home. You know, we want to have that. But so it's a culture that we get and we kind of don't talk about it. But how important is it that we actually write this down and we say, look, we don't want to fall off this radar. Is that important for us to do?
I think it's important. And I don't care as much whether you craft the words in a formal way that's public viewing. That part I don't care about. You'll talk to a lot of customer service experts. They think that's where it all starts. It starts with crafting the culture in words. And I guess as long as your team knows, whoever's listening to this, I'm a solopreneur here. There's no team behind me full time. I mean, I hire out people, but I'm sitting in my office right now alone. And I still have in my head what I want you saying about me when you talk behind my back. Mm-hmm. Really, to me, that's what the mission statement means. And I'm hoping that people use the words, these are the things that are important to me. She's the exact same person on stage that she is off. Great. That is so important to me. And I think if you were talking behind my back, Nick, that's one of the things you would say. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of these people who's this way here. And then when you talk to me privately, I'm something very different. I would think you would say, no, that's not the case. I'm pretty much the same all the time.
You're the same person on a podcast as you are off a podcast. Yes. I'll say that right now. Everybody listening, this is Lori. And this is the level of conversations we have, which is all, they're fantastic because you're really fun. And at the same time, you're very serious when it comes to business and very direct about it. And I love that about you. So fantastic.
And so I have a series of things that I would, and that's how I look at it. And so when you think about your business, what do you want people saying about Revisit behind your back? And if they're doing that, then you obviously are giving that out to your clients. But if they're saying something different, first of all, you have to you know, pull that. What is that? That's what the secret shopping does. You know, here's what they're saying about you. Where are they wrong? Where are they right? And you need to fix something. You know, where are those little places? And it's just interesting. And I think it, to your original question, what is it that the people have in common that we've secret shopped all these years? What do they have in common that falls on the bad side? And it is not that their product and service wasn't good. Most of the time, whatever they're selling, it's good.
Yeah.
I have no problem with the service. It is the behavior of the employees, the talent to build rapport and make people want to come back to reorder, revisit, you know, rebuy. What makes them want to do that?
So this,
and they miss out.
So I mean, we can go on about this all day, and I know we got to move off this topic in a second here, but I just to dig one layer deeper. So how do, what advice do you give these companies that I've worked, look, when I was a kid, when I was, you know, fresh out of high school and stuff, I worked for companies and I didn't give a crap about them. You know what I mean? It was like paycheck, right? You know, like I go, I got to go to the job and do the thing and whatever that is, right? So how do you get somebody to embrace the company culture and feel like they're part of that? Like, is that something you can sum up easily, or is that like?
Well, I think it's hard. I think it's very difficult. And my work is usually directly with the management team or the trainers that are going to help the team. And you bring up an interesting point. I should probably dig a little deeper into how do we get the desired results? My feeling is that it comes down to, do you feel a part of that family? Do you have a vested interest in making it grow? And I think things are changing as our next generation comes into the workforce. A lot of them are entrepreneurial thinkers. They're earning a paycheck while they're building a business in their head or on the side, with full intentions to bolt. And so I think the secret lies in how do I, if you are working for me right now and you're 21 years old and you know you're not going to work for me forever, how do I get the best you during this year or 18 months I'm going to have you? Mm-hmm. And I think that this is the great mystery. How do we do it? I think part of it is knowing you, knowing what's important to you. Maybe what's important to you is some flexibility in your schedule. If I can offer that, you may go, gosh, I am not leaving her because I can bop out of here at 3 o'clock on days when I've got a meeting with somebody. You know, whatever that is, but looking past the just filling the slots in the schedule, but being able to connect with people. And you see that in your own company. You know, the fact that your guy goes surfing and you know that, you probably honor that and don't schedule your meetings first thing in the morning because you know the dude's out surfing.
That's so exactly right. Yeah,
you're
that's
making
great.
It a place where he wants to work. And isn't that the beauty of being entrepreneurs? We get to decide that it's okay to create these boundaries. I love that.
Well, I'll tell you, I read a lot about this kind of topic. And one of the things that I see, particularly with the millennials coming in, but really it's kind of a thing that's seeping across all the boundaries of business right now, is the entrepreneurial spirit is so alive in our economy and in the world we live in. There's so many people, more than ever before in history, are people have their own businesses, they're running their own show. But what's happening is now that entrepreneurial spirit's entering the corporate workplace as well. And they're basically saying, look, you know, you're the, whatever you're in charge of, you're the manager of sales or you're the district, you know, manager, whatever that is. And that's your little entrepreneurial business. And we want you to run, we want you to have ownership of it. We want you to, you know, and they can feel like they're running something, they can feel like they're important and, you know, not just being dictated what to do and when to show up. And so, you know, and I've been in some other startups prior to the one that I'm in, the one that I, you know, am a part of, where I was just a guy who worked there and stuff. And I have to say, you know, that's part of the thing is you want to show up to work and feel like, you know, even though this isn't my company, you know, I have ownership of, you know, I was director of production at this gaming company. And I wanted to like make that cool. I wanted to make the coolest games. I wanted to get recognized for that. You know what I mean? So I think that's something that we're seeing more and more of. And I think that's what people can take away is, are you letting your employees and the people who are, even the people you outsource or whatever, are you letting them own that and have a sense of entrepreneurship, you know, in the workplace?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to ask Lori to give us some specifics. How the heck does she make money doing this? Because we don't get it. So we're going to ask you how you monetize your business. And then we're going to ask her the big question, what are her profit abilities? So stick around. We'll be right back after this message. Are you looking to learn business strategies from some of the top experts in the world? Or are you looking to earn income as a leading expert yourself? At Revisit, we empower leaders, innovators, and experts to create online learning products that get better over time. Interactive learning products on Revisit remain live connected to the creators, who can add or update the content instantly, offer direct access and feedback, exclusive communities, and even special discounts and offers. Our unique app-based solution means the products you buy or create will remain exclusive and valuable in the hands of paying customers only. So, start learning or start earning at Revizit.com. That's R-E-V-I-Z-Z-I-T.com.
And now, back to the Profitability Show.
And we're back at the Profitability Show with Lori Guest, customer service expert, professional speaker, and secret shopper.
The word's out.
I know, the word is out now. So, okay, this is a part of the show that I always find really interesting because there's so many ways to monetize a business. There can be, revenue streams coming in from all over, and it's really interesting to find out about different companies and how that works. So we would like to know, Lori, what are the different revenue streams you have? What are the ways that you monetize your business?
Well, I have to tell you that this is the area that I found most surprising and most exciting about the speaking business, because when I went into it, I assumed it was, I give a speech, I get paid.
That's what I would think.
That's how it is. Yeah. And the better you are, the more you get paid, the better clients you find, the more you get paid, and the more you do, the better. So if you want to be on the road 200 days a year, you're going to make more money than somebody that's on the road 60 days a year.
So far, and everything you said is what I would think. So
yes,
tell us what's not. Yeah.
Well, then I started to stumble into, and here's where I think the takeaway is for anybody listening to this, is that sometimes we have a talent for something that we have no idea people will pay money for it.
Mm.
For example, creativity is my strongest attribute. I have a lot of weaknesses, but that's not what this show is about. So we are not talking about the weaknesses right now. But one of my greatest strengths is my ability to talk, connect with people, and creativity. And when I would talk to meeting planners on the phone, they're the ones who are going to hire me to come in to speak. In the beginning, I would just accept the job and get however much I was going to get for it. And then one day I was talking to a group and they really didn't know what they were doing. A lot of the people I work for, they're volunteer committees. It's not somebody paid full time to do it. So the group changes every year and they really don't know what they're doing. And I could tell in the phone call that they didn't know. So at one point I very gingerly said, would you be open to hearing some ideas on how you could really make this meeting pop and get butts in seats? Because that's what they care about, butts, people paying to be there. And the reaction from the meeting planner surprised me. She goes, oh my gosh, is that something we could pay you to do? I wasn't even thinking about being paid to do it. And she caught me off guard. And instead I went, oh my goodness, no, you don't have to pay me. I just want to give you some ideas. And then after I hung up, I thought, if somebody says, can I pay you? That means they were willing to. Maybe I should rethink that. And so I started to say to people who acted like they were struggling, I found a way to say, and just so you know, if it's of interest to you, we have a package you can buy where I will provide you with blah, blah, blah. And I would go through the right wording to get butts in seats. I will work with you to create a theme. Keep in mind, I go to hundreds of meetings a year. So I've seen about everything there is you can do creatively. And I found out that people were willing to pay for that. At one of the events, I have a program that's called Managing the Red Carpet, where I have the license that lets me show famous movie clips and use that in the content. Well, this particular client had a lot of extra money, and they decided they wanted to turn it into an entire Oscar event. So they hired me to buy actual red carpet, velvet ropes. We built a concession stand.
Wow.
I had to find people who could just completely turn this lobby into something that felt like a movie theater. And they paid me many thousand extra dollars to coordinate the decorations.
This is something I didn't know about you. This is fantastic.
Who would have thought you could go into this job and get paid for your creative ideas? And so for the people who are listening to this, I really encourage you to, what comes easy for you? What do people go, gosh, I wish I could do that? So like, Nick, what you do that comes so easy to you and so difficult to me is you're a techie kind of guy. You just know how to jump on an app and push the buttons and make it work. And I go, gosh, I have no idea how that works. So on a regular basis, I'm sending you notes and you're helping me out. Now, for you and I, that's inner circle favors. We're helping each other. But you have a talent that maybe many of my colleagues don't have. Are they willing to pay a fee to be the guy who figures it out? Well, you don't even have that on your menu list. So that's just a brief example, like where you go, well, I didn't even know people would pay for it.
That's right.
Because it comes easy for you.
No, and that's really interesting. And that's really how we started the production services department at Revizit.
Yeah.
Was everybody just, after you hear enough times, this is another thing for those listening, if you hear enough time the same question and you don't have an answer for it. So when people would say, can I just pay somebody to do this for me? I don't have time. Can you just do this? How much would it be if you would just do this for me? Okay, after a while you go, apparently I should be doing this for you. And then
it's exactly what I'm saying.
You answer the call. So it's fantastic.
It's just amazing. And I know we talked a lot about the secret shopping thing, but that happened completely by accident. I was doing an event for local 50 business owners, and I knew most of them, and I knew they're going to have an attitude that when I start teaching customer service 101, they're going to fold their arms and they're going to lean back and they're going to give that look of teach me something I don't know. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, how can I show them they need to know this? Ah, I will go and shop them, and then I'll at least be able to say, and they loved it. Here's what another thing that's interesting on that. I give out a bronze, silver, and gold award to the people who do it best. Praise in public, criticize in private, right?
On let's just clarify real quick. So you're saying when you do the event after you've secret shopped, then you award for the best customer service. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Or the best slice of service, something special they did that's noteworthy. Because you have to praise in public and give the criticism in private. Because if I criticize people in public,
I'm
not going to be loved anymore, right?
You
shame them. Yeah. But here's the interesting thing, and why I bring it up, is that I would think the people who get a confidential report with low ratings would be the ones who would want to hire me. No. The people who get the awards almost 100% of the time are the ones who want more from me.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Wow.
And so as entrepreneurs, we need to be thinking, we think our customer is one type of person. In my case, I thought it was the people who scored poorly. And so when people come up to you and say, oh my gosh, we got the gold award. You got to come in and tell the rest of the staff what happened. This is so fantastic. When I had enough people saying, you know what you should do is... It dawned on me, you know what I should do is I should have a program that's specifically designed for the reveal to the winners. If you got an award, we've got a special program just for your team. And I'd say 15 to 20% of the time we get hired to do that. That's an encore program. And all it took was a sentence to say, hey, if you want your whole staff to feel good about this win, let me bring it in and reveal it.
That is so cool.
I want entrepreneurs to be thinking when they say, boy, could I just pay you two? Mm-hmm. You got your answer.
Wow, that's great. So getting back to your monetization. So you're getting paid to, and of course, these are all variables, but you get paid to present your keynote speech or whatever for an organization, which is more of the Solutions Are Brewing brand, right? This is
correct.
Where you come in and you talk about what customer service culture and stuff like that. Is that what you're
A lot of times it's pure entertainment or edutainment. So it's more of the soft skills. It might be just a humorous keynote that sets the tone of the meeting. So it may not even be on customer service, although there's always a thread of that because it's just a part of who I am.
Right. So then you have that. And then from that, you branch out into the potential of the guest encounter, secret shopping, doing the reveal shows for different people. What about any kind of online presence or products or anything else that's like passive income?
Yes. And I think that is so important. I don't care what industry you're in. There's a passive form of income that you need to think about. You don't have to be a speaker or a trainer to have a book or to have an online program.
That's
so
right.
I do have a book. It's called Wrapped in Stillness, A Personal Retreat Guide. That's the book that was dying to get out of me. And that's mostly back of room sales that goes with the humorous feel good keynote. And then we have an online platform that we're currently getting ramped up that goes with guest encounters. Because what I found out is after I tell them what the treatment plan is, how to make it better, I was leaving them with the assignment of go make it better. Mm-hmm. And I was finding out they didn't have the tools to do that. So it only made sense. Why not offer them an online program? And we're doing that through Revisit. And I am so happy with how that's shaping up. I think of it like the Netflix of customer service.
Fantastic.
So you're able to go on there, you pay a flat fee, and you're able to access all the videos and the experts that are in this tank. It's not available yet, but as you're well aware, we're working hard to get it done. And I wish I'd thought of it sooner. I mean, if I would have realized that this passive income amounts to so much, I really would like to go back in time. But my dad always says, you can't look backwards, you just got to look forward. So I always tell myself, well, maybe I wasn't ready 10 years ago. Maybe now is when I'm ready. And I certainly wouldn't be building it on Revisit if I hadn't met you 18 months ago. So I guess it was meant to be to wait until I encountered a great platform to do it on. So.
That's great. Well, thank you very much for that. So and for those listening, although at the time of this recording, Guest Encounters is in full steam ahead mode. It's not released yet. But if it's released now, if it's available now, if you go to this show page on theprofitabilityshow.com, there will be a link that gets updated. When it's released, you'll be able to get it there. So just check in. Maybe it's already available. Who knows?
I sure hope so, because I don't want to be talking a year from now how I'm still ramping up. So that's challenge. Throw it down.
I'm your accountability partner. That's not going to happen.
It will be ready.
Okay, let's go now to my favorite part of the show, the namesake of the show, profitabilities. Let's talk about What are your profitabilities? And again, for those who are new to the show, we define profitabilities as the things that we know if we do more of this, it means more Benjamins in the bank. So whatever that is for you, you say, you know what? Whether you like it, whether you hate it, it doesn't matter. You know, in your heart of hearts, if I do more of this, I'm going to get more money. That's your profitability. And those are the things that we want to learn from others. What are their profitabilities? How can we apply that to our businesses? And so, Lori, tell us, what is your one or more profitabilities? Do you have one you can share with us?
I do have one, and I'm very excited about it because I think it makes a huge difference. And my profitability is in the pricing structure. And I don't care if you're selling dishwashers or speaking services or entertainment, we all have a number that we throw out when the customer wants to buy our product. So I am going to use speaking as my example, but I hope that everybody listening can realize we can bridge this over to anything that that you are doing. So here's the deal. A client will say, how much do you charge? Mm-hmm. And I believe that if you throw out a number, a flat number of any kind, one of two things happens. You either outprice yourself and the customer says, I can't do that, or you underprice and leave money on the table. So my strategy is not to answer that question right out of the gate. I like to say, you know, I think I have something for almost any budget. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your meeting? So it's the same with anybody else listening to this. You know, we have a project that can fit any one of your needs. Tell me what you're looking for. So some words that mean tell me more. And this is sales 101, but a lot of people don't realize it. Mm-hmm. Sales is made by keeping your mouth shut and your ears open and listening to what the customer says they need and want, because that's what they're willing to pay for. Find the pain, provide the solution, you make the Benjamins. That's how it goes.
That's right.
So based on what the customer tells me, I already have an estimate of what it is they need from me. What can I deliver? What would the price tag be? So let's fast forward. That conversation has now taken place. I offer a three-tiered pricing option, and I design it on purpose so that the middle option is the sweet spot. I call it sweet spot pricing. So I want you to think for a second. Nick, you and your wife go out to buy a new refrigerator this afternoon. Mm-hmm. When you get there, there's three fridges to choose from. One looks like your grandma's fridge, and it's the lowest price, and you know you don't want grandma's fridge. And then the premium one, the high end, it plays music, dances, and spits out colored ice. And your wife says, we don't need to buy that one. And you both agree, middle. Right. And when you think about it, we are conditioned as consumers to buy in the middle, to choose the middle package all the time. Think about it. Cars, vacations, husbands, you know, all these
hey,
things.
Hey, wait a minute.
They're middle of the road. Come on. You were the middle guy. I have no doubt in the mind. You were the sweet spot in the middle. See, there was a dud on one side and there was somebody really, really rich and hot on the other side. And she picked you. See?
She stepped up. She stepped up to me.
Let's just say. Yeah. You better edit that.
She was at the sweet spot and then she moved up.
Yeah. There you go. She elevated. Yeah. And so then I pick a number, and the sweet spot, I want people to think about, it's the amount of money you want to be paid for the amount of work that you're providing or the product that you're providing. It's a win-win. Everybody's happy when we're in the sweet spot. That's what we want. But now I want to change the metaphor to uprights on a football field.
Okay.
I want you to kick that ball right down the middle of the uprights, but the only way you're going to know how to do that is if those two uprights are visible to you. Otherwise, you're kicking into Never Never Land. You don't know where the target is.
Right.
So that's what I call basic, deluxe, and premium. Deluxe is in the middle, and now we go to basic. Think of this as a less than package, less money than you want to earn, but less work or product that you're going to supply. And it has to have a deterrent in it. It has to have a reason why the customer wouldn't want it if they can afford more. Mm-hmm. So in my case, an example of a deterrent is this package is available when I'm already in your area. So I live in Northern Illinois. You want me to come out to San Diego to speak, but you can't afford that middle price, then you're going to have to wait till I'm already in at the West Coast if you want the lower number. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I go to the premium package. Think of this as the more than. More money than you think they can pay. And I mean way more money. Way more money than you think they can pay. And way more work than you really want to do. So that's where those creative ideas we talked about earlier, that's where I start adding the, we'll help you get butts in seats, although it's worded nicer than that. Creative ideas, you know, whatever these bullets are, it might be usually include secret shopping. And they go, ooh, we like that idea, but the number's too high. So this is what's cool. They either automatically go for deluxe if they can afford it, or this is what they say. You know, we'd really love the premium, but we just don't have that in our budget. What do you think my next question is? What's your budget? Or is there something specific in the premium package that really jazzes you, Nick? And you go, you know what? We don't need all that creative stuff. We've got that, but we'd love to be secret shopped.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't I pull out just that one, move it to the deluxe package, and now we charge you X plus Y. And I call this finding the gap. Mm-hmm. See, there's a gap of money between, let's just use 5,000 and 10,000. I quoted 5,000 for the deluxe and 10,000 for the premium. And if you truly do not have more than 5,000, you'll say to me, we're going to go with the deluxe. Period. End of story. But if you say to me, boy, we sure do like the premium, it tells me we've got gap money and we might have $2,000 of gap money. So when I say to you, how about we pull out just the secret shopping, we'll move it to the middle package and we'll charge you $7,500 for that.
Mm-hmm.
How does that sound? And you say, perfect. So I've eked out $2,500 more out of a contract that I wouldn't have gotten at all maybe if when you said, how much do you charge? And I would have said $5,000, end of conversation. We wouldn't win.
That's genius. It's really, really smart. And the thing that's so smart about it is that, you know, and we see this too, like on landing pages for pricing, you know, for online products, things like that, you know, where you see, you know, the highlighted strip down the middle, right? You've got the, you know, the basic plan and the deluxe plan and then the premium plan. And the deluxe plan is the most chosen and the highlighted one down the middle.
Always.
And it's got the list of all the things that you get and whatever. And I think that people, they're naturally going to go straight to, well, what's in the big package? And they start ticking off in their mind, I don't need that. I don't really need that. Oh, that would be cool, but I don't really need that. And so in those situations, a lot of times you kind of have a hard choice. You got to go, well, there is something there that I really need, but I don't need all that other stuff. And I feel like I'm paying for it. So you kind of go, well, I guess I got to be in the middle and I don't get that cool thing, the cool gizmo. So I really love the idea of having those channels, but being open to the flexibility of being able to say, well, what caught your eye over there and pull that in? And yeah, that's really smart.
And I think because you have a lot of entertainers that might be listening to this podcast, they really need to get creative on what's going to be in that premium package. For example, in that industry, I don't think they used to do meet and greets all the time. I think that's a relatively new thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea is you'll stay for an hour after the show and you'll be with the VIPs,
mm-hmm.
you know, and all of a sudden they're going to pay more for that. Now, a lot of entertainers have told me, oh, I just roll that in. I want to be seen as a nice guy. So I just roll that in. And my whole thing is you're not being seen as a not nice guy by offering it as an option. It's if they want you to do it and you just say, no, I won't do it. But if you say, if you'd like me to do this, I'm happy to, it's in the premium package. That's where you start eking out those extra dollars. Cause I can't imagine there's an entertainer out there who loves staying for the meet and greet afterwards.
That's right.
They might have a smile on their face, but they really want to be home with their cheeseburger, you know, on the highway back home. We've all been there.
Yeah.
So let's eke out some dollars for it without being the bad guy.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love it. So, and now you mentioned that there might be a second profitability that lurks in there somewhere. And I'm just curious what that might be.
Sure. Well, I was saying I wasn't sure which one to choose because one is very businessy and all about the money. And the other is the other side. And it's all about the feelings. So I guess it depends on whether the listeners like this. But I ran across this in my own head a few years ago, and I'm pretty happy with it. And I call it crafting contentment.
Okay.
As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, the only benchmark we have in this industry and in many industries as entrepreneurs of doing well is the benchmark of more. More money, more work, more is the benchmark. And that didn't make sense to me. I would go to our NSA meetings and people would be bragging about how they work 200 days a year. And that obviously means they make a lot of money. And in my head, you know, I'm raising two kids. I've got a husband I adore. I have a house I want to be in. How is that the benchmark of success? If I'm missing every band concert, every football game, if I'm missing all that stuff, what is this about?
Absolutely.
And at the same time, my mom was ill. I lost my mom about 5 years ago, and I was very close to my mom. And what I realized, and being the first person I was with as the time shrinks down, gosh, I know we read this all the time, but to experience it firsthand, none of that stuff mattered. More did not matter in that last year. And so it made me step back and go, well, what matters to me? And more is not what mattered. So I created new benchmarks for myself and I turned it upside down. And now as I speak to our different, each of our states have a chapter meeting of NSA, I always start out by saying, craft your contentment, create your bubble. For me, 60 times a year. That's my badge of honor. I speak 60 times a year and I better find other ways to diversify my income through some of the things we've talked about to meet the financial goal I have. Because if I'm going to only speak 60 times a year and I'm not going to be a $25,000 or $50,000 appearance speaker, then the money doesn't work the way I want it to. Mm-hmm. So I have to be willing to accept, here's my fee level for 60 times. Where's the rest of the income going to come?
Right.
And so I do not put a badge of honor of how many times I've spoken or even how much I got paid. Mine is, was it the right client? Did I travel at a time that works for my family? Did I get to sleep in my own bed as often as possible? Am I meeting my financial obligations? And then here's the big one. Am I still having fun doing this? Because
that's
as entrepreneurs,
great.
We have choice. And if I want to quit doing this tomorrow, I don't own a building. I'm in my living room right now. You know, I can close the doors right now and start inventing games if that's what I want to do. Because when the time gets short, more is not what matters. And that's what I try and teach.
That's really interesting what you're saying, because crafting contentment. We had a guest on the show earlier, Jeff Keane, who is a cartoonist. And, you know, he has a very successful business and it's very, you know, it's established. He knows what he's doing. He makes the money that he makes. And it's not, his business isn't about growing it. It isn't about marketing it. It isn't about his profit that he was seeking was quality time. You know, he wanted to have time with his family. He wanted to. So how can he work in a way that lets him have more of that? That was the profit he was seeking. And I think what you're saying is very similar, which is, you know, you can be driven to like make your business successful and stuff. But part of the profit of all of this, you know, we're not trying to become entrepreneurs or small businesses and stuff so that we can never do anything else. And, you know, and unfortunately, that's the reality of a lot of it, is that you feel like, you know, when you have your own business, you never get to come home from business. You're doing it. You know, even when you're sitting at night watching TV, you're still thinking about the business. When you wake up in the morning, the first thing you're thinking about the business. So being able to craft those places in your life where you just say, look, it's time, whether it's a vacation, whether it's how many times you get to sleep at home. You know, if you're a person who travels on the road a lot, you know, I think those things are so key to, you know, just having that work-life balance. I think that is a really, really valuable profitability. So thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Excellent. So we're going to wrap up now. I need to know, Laura Guest, what's next for you? What's on the horizon? What are you working on? We know about Guest Encounters. We talked a little bit about that. Anything else exciting going on? Anything you can tell us about?
What I'm really looking at now is stopping new in my work life and just keep getting better. Mm-hmm. Because for so many years, it was change, change, change. And I'm noticing this as I go to my mastermind meetings or I meet with other colleagues. A lot of people are always looking for change. How can I grow and do more, mm-hmm. as we've already talked about? And it's dawning on me that I don't need to add. In fact, I should probably prune just a little bit. So I'm going to be in the process of the next couple of years, get Guest Encounters done, and then start pruning. What can I get rid of so that what I am doing is razor sharp and focused and at the best of my game I can possibly be? And I think we all, no matter what our industry is, we have to keep being good. I think about watching Tiger Woods. I'm a big golfer and watched him play at the U.S. Open one year. And after he plays 18 holes of beautiful golf, where does he go? Driving range.
Really?
He hits another hour worth of balls at the driving range. And I remember thinking, wow, dude's the best in the world at the time. And I'm thinking, he's hitting balls. So like, we're never the very best we can be. We can always be better at what we're doing, but
there's
we've
no
got
finish
to
line.
Things down. There's no finish line.
Yeah.
And so balancing all these things we're talking about is like, what's the benchmark for success, but then what's the quality inside that? And so that's really what the future is for me, and trying to figure out if I have a brand new idea that can make money. So that's pretty exciting.
Well, it sounds good to me. And I like the idea of pruning. That's interesting. I'll have to think about that. That might be mm-hmm. worth considering.
That's
so,
right.
So where can the listeners find out more about Laura Guest? Where can we get in touch with you? If we have a business that we need secret shopped, how does that work? What can we do?
Great. On the speaking side, it's Solutions Are Brewing. And the R is spelled out A-R-E. Think about coffee or beer, whichever way you want to look at it.
Okay.
And that's where you find the speaking stuff. And then on the secret shopping side, that's guestencounters.com. And you'll find all the things you need to reach me either way, or you can just do the good old Google of my full name spelled correctly, and you can find me, Northern Illinois. So.
That's right. Laura Guest, that's spelled Guest, G-U-E-S-T. And Laura, it's been so great having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I look forward to finding out your secrets after we hang up. And for more interesting ideas and guests and ways that you can grow your business, please do me a favor. Go to iTunes or write in your podcast app on your mobile device and go to the Profitability Show and just give us a rating, give us a review, maybe subscribe to the show. All of those things are going to tell the folks at Apple that we're worth listening to, which means we're going to have more listeners. If we have more listeners, I'm going to be able to get really, really cool guests like Lori Guest. So do that for me. I appreciate it. Lori, thank you for being here. And we'll see you all next week at the Profitability Show.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to learn more profitabilities, go to profitabilityshow.com for episodes, show notes, and more. And be sure to click the subscribe button to get the latest episodes delivered straight to your favorite device.